Morning, everyone. I've had a subject on my mind for a little while. I've been thinking about it and wasn't sure if it was something I had thought of or hopefully the Lord had thought of and put on my mind. But I was listening to some of the news here several days ago, a little over a week ago, and one of the presidential candidates got in a little bit of a discussion with one of the news reporters, and question came up, and the candidate didn't know where the location was, didn't know what the newscaster was asking him, and had to ask him to repeat it. And the question was about, what are you going to do about the situation in Aleppo? And the candidate didn't know, and it was real confusing, and a lot of commentators thought, well, how can he be president if he doesn't know what's going on in Aleppo? A-L-E-P-P-O, I believe. It's a city in Syria. You know, right now we've got a crisis going on in Syria. The head of the Syrian government is a man named Assad, and they got a civil war going on, and Assad is accused of treating his people very harshly and, in fact, causing the death of millions of people. And there's a huge refugee crisis going on. A lot of the people in Syria are leaving their homes because they're afraid they'll be killed, and they're all heading up in the northern part of Syria. All, and there's millions of people up there in camps and camping out, and of course, the United States believes that Assad is a dictator, a cruel dictator, a killer of people. And we tend to side with the rebels that are opposing him. Of course, the country of Russia sides with Assad, and that puts us on different sides of that story. And you hear about the ceasefire going on in Syria. And Aleppo is that part of the country up in northern Syria where all these refugees are going to try to seek kind of a safe haven. They're all going up there, and this guy didn't know where Aleppo was. Well, I hope by the end of the day, I'm not speaking on Aleppo, but I can tell you that right there where all those people are, that's what we're going to talk about today. And I'm sitting here studying this area and what took place here with the tribe of Dan. We're going to talk about Dan this morning. And Aleppo is where all those Syrians are right now. And so what we're going to be talking about today is that area that is just actually just a few miles, maybe 4, 5, 10 at the most, outside of Aleppo. And it's a large city. It's the largest city up in northern Syria. But right in that area is where the tribe of Dan had a lot of activity going on that we're going to be discussing today in the book of Judges. I don't know, and that was kind of like a light on to me. I thought that's exactly the area. I don't know that I'd have known where Aleppo was other than you see it on the map. But we're going to be in the book of Judges, but let me start a little bit, give you a little preface before we get there. We're going to talk in the 17th and 18th chapter of Judges. That's where we're going to end up, but it's going to take me a couple of minutes to get there because I want to kind of give you some background in what's going on. If you go to the Revelations chapter, I want to go to Revelations chapter 14, I believe. In the wrong chapter there. Revelation chapter 14, there's an interesting statement in Revelations 14. This was the vision of John. And he's viewing, having a chance to look into heaven, and he's given us his vision. And, of course, there's a lot of symbolism. But he states, right at the 14th chapter, "And I looked, and lo, a lamb stood on the Mount Zion." And he's talking about Christ in heaven there, the lamb and on Mount Zion. "And with him 144,000, having his Father's name written in their foreheads." A lot of people misinterpret that and say on their foreheads. That's the mark. And it doesn't say that. It says in their foreheads. And this 144,000 is mentioned several times, and a lot of times there's a question about who that is talking about when it talks about that 144,000. But you get down in verse 4, and it closes with this. "These 144,000, these were redeemed from among men, being the first fruits unto God and to the Lamb." They were the first fruits. If you go back in Leviticus chapter 23, God was laying down the various feast and parts of the law he wanted the nation of Israel to follow. And he talked about one of the things they had to do was offer the first fruits. And that's what this is referencing here. They had a requirement to offer first fruits unto the Lord. What I think of today is, you know, my kids raised had a dog. We had a golden retriever one time and bred it, and we had purebred golden retriever pups that they got to sell. And the person we bred it to wanted pick of the litter, first of the litter. And so he got to take pick of the litter. This is what the Lord talked about in first fruits. I want pick of the litter. I want the first choice of your first fruits produced. if you had a crop, a cotton crop out here, he said, the very first cotton that's produced, the best and the first, I want you to take it and offer it to the Lord. If the Lord blesses and accepts that first fruits, then he'll bless the entire crop. If you had a herd of sheep, if you had sheep and you were breeding them for the next year, you take the very best young sheep you had and offer it to the Lord as a sacrifice. If the Lord accepted it and was pleased with it, then he would bless your entire herd. So it was a great way to have a blessing if the Lord, if you take your first and offer it to the Lord, and that's what we're supposed to do on a daily basis, first thing we do is offer ourselves to the Lord, and then the Lord will bless us in everything else we do. And that's what first fruits is. That's what you're supposed to do, is the first fruits is the first offering up to the Lord. And if the Lord accepts that, then he blesses the entire group or harvest after that. Well, you know, Christ said in the Sermon on the Mount, I didn't come to destroy the law, but I came to fulfill it. Every jot, every tittle, every dot, every I, and cross every T under the law, it will all be done, and Christ will fulfill all of that. He fulfilled the law for us. We're not required to fill all those 600 and something laws under the Old Testament because Christ fulfilled those for us. We have no duty under the law at all anymore because Christ has taken over our duty, and he's made us righteous by him fulfilling the law. So 1 Corinthians, Apostle Paul tells us, I believe it's chapter 15, verse 20 of 1 Corinthians, he tells us that Christ was our first fruits. He was our first fruits. He was the one that died, the sacrifice that died. If you had a lamb, you were supposed to take the unblemished male lamb of the first year and offer that as a part of that first fruits offering. Well, that's what Christ did for us on the cross. If you go back into Matthew chapter 27, I believe it is, over there later on toward the end, it says when Christ died on the cross and he went through that, when he finally died and passed away, it said then the veil of the temple was torn in two. That gave us direct access to the Lord. We didn't have to go through the priest anymore. But it also said, and it had an earthquake, and graves were opened up. Graves were opened up, and people came out of those graves and went into the holy city. Well, that's not talking about Jerusalem. That's talking about heaven. That was the first offering. Christ died on the cross, made that first offering, and if that was acceptable, then he blessed the entire crop, which would be all of us elect. Well, Lord clearly accepted Christ's offering. The way you did that first fruit offering, if you go read Leviticus, it says the priest would take a sheath of grain. If that was your crop as a grain, he'd take it and he'd wave it up in the air before the Lord. And if the Lord accepted it, then he would bless your crop in abundance, your whole grain crop. That's what Christ did. He presented himself as that first fruit offering, and the Lord accepted that first amount of first fruits. But if you go look in Matthew, it's talking about those people that came out of the grave right then. And that's what I believe we're talking about here in Revelations chapter 14. If you go back to Revelations chapter 7, it gives you a little bit more detail about the 144,000. It says, I saw, down in verse 4, and I heard the number of them which were sealed, people that were sealed that were there in heaven, and there were sealed 144,000 of all the tribes of the children of Israel. And he goes through and tells us, you remember there were 12 tribes of Israel, 12 families. I'll talk about that in a second. 12 families, 144,000 of all the tribes. And he goes on and tells us, out of the tribe of Judah were 12,000, Reuben 12,000, Gad 12,000, Asher 12,000, Naphtali, Manasseh, Simeon, Levi, Issachar, Zebulun, Joseph. He talks about all the 12 tribes of Israel, and each one of them had 12,000 there. That's 144,000. Most of us believe, I guess the commentators believe, that that's who came out of the graves, 12,000 out of each of those tribes on the day Christ died, and that was the first fruit offering, as it tells us over in Revelations. Those 144,000 were the first fruit offering of Christ. But I read this list to you of 12,000 from each one of the tribes. Dan is not mentioned. Dan was one of the sons of Jacob, who composed one of the 12 tribes of Israel. Dan's not in that list. Why? What happened to Dan? Now, we're not talking about the eternal salvation. We're talking about our first fruit offering. There's a lot more to come. A lot more people that are going to be in heaven. This was just the first fruit. The sheath of grain doesn't begin to represent the entire crop of grain that the Lord accepted. And just like the Lord, when he accepted the first fruits of people, he accepted all the elect. That's why we're already been accepted, because of the work of Christ. We don't have anything else left to do. we do have some work to do. And I think that's what we see takes place with Dan. But it talks about this list of 12,000 out of each one of those 12 tribes of Israel. Back a little history real quick. Many of you know this. We had Abraham, the father, after we had Adam and Eve, and then the world populated, and we had the great flood because evil was in the world. Then the Lord raised up the man named Abraham, and in him he said all people will be blessed. Abraham then had a son, Isaac. Isaac then had two sons, Jacob and Esau. Esau was the one the Lord didn't bless, but he didn't bless Jacob. And then Jacob had 12 sons. Each one of those sons had families. We call those families tribes when you talk about Israel. And the nation of Israel was composed of these 12 families, very large extended families. It'd be like here, you know, in this church we have the Barrington family, you know, and we have the Ross family, and we have the Arbor family. You know, that's what we're talking about when we say tribes, 12 families. And they got to be very large over a period of time. The time they ended up down in Egypt and coming out of Egypt, we had about somewhere, we estimate, 3 to 5 million people who left in that march out of Egypt to come up to the Holy Land and claim their property there. But anyway, back to that's how the 12 tribes came from. And Dan was one of those children. Dan was the fifth child of Jacob. But yet when we start listing all of these, Dan's not in here. Levi is substituted. Levi was a son, but he was the priesthood. And he wasn't considered one of the 12 tribes of Israel. We had the 12 tribes of Israel, 12 families, and then Levi. So actually it was 13 children. But we talk about the 12 tribes of Israel. Those 12 tribes, as we know today, the biggest one was the tribe of Judah. That's where the Jewish people get their name. That's where we came up with the term Jewish. It's from the tribe of Judah. Judah and Benjamin pretty much were left, the only two tribes that were left. The other 10 tribes occupied northern Israel were captured by Syria. We call it Syria today. It was called Assyria back then. They were captured, interbred. They lost their identity. Many of them became what's known as Samaritans, but they lost their pure Jewish blood. Today's slang term, a slur, we call them half-breeds, I guess, be the best term you could look for them. And the Jewish people resented them because they had intermingled with the Arab people and became Samaritans. If you're a Jewish person, it's important to you that you know your genealogy. You know which one of these tribes of Israel you came out of. And again, particularly the only ones that are left are the tribes of Judah and Benjamin, and they pretty much integrated. And if you're a Jewish person today, you should be able to trace your lineage back to the original tribe of Judah. But Dan's not mentioned here, and it's curious sometimes what happened to Dan. If you go back and look when Jacob blessed his 12 sons, 13 sons, actually. Levi was not counted a tribe at the time, but it was just the priesthood. But when he blessed them, he went in and he said, the problem with Dan is, Dan is like a snake. He described him as a serpent, a snake, back in Genesis when he's blessing those. When Moses was leading the people out of Israel, and he was leading these 12 tribes, these several million people, he talked about the tribe of Dan. Dan, he said, is like a lion cub. Timid at first, but then he becomes strong later on as he matures. But Dan's a little timid up front, but then gets stronger. So you have these two interesting views by the father, Jacob, and then by Moses, the great leader, who led all these millions of people, broken up into these 12 families, led them out of Egypt. If you go with me into Joshua, I believe it's chapter 19, where Joshua is leading them into the promised land. And he said, now, this is the land the Lord's going to give you. We're going to parcel it out. We're going to divide it up geographically. Everybody gets their own land. Everybody gets their piece of land. At that time, Dan was the second largest tribe. He was the fifth son. He was the second largest family. Had about between 60 and 65,000 men, fighting men of fighting age. So that means they probably had 150,000, 200,000 people in the family. He was second only to Judah. Judah was the largest, and then Dan was the second largest with these, and they counted them by how many men were prepared to go to war, and that totaled to be, it changed a little bit, but it went from 62,000 to 64,000. Those are the two numbers given in the Old Testament there that came out of the tribe of Dan that were ready to go fight. And it allotted them land. They allotted everybody a piece of land. Manasseh got a huge piece of land, even though it wasn't the largest tribe. Judah got primarily around the holy city of Jerusalem. Dan got the piece of land that was just to the west of Judah or Jerusalem. And it's a land that borders the Mediterranean Sea. I want to do this right to y'all. Here's the Mediterranean Sea. And the tribe of Dan was right there. And in the center of that is where the city of Tel Aviv is today. The capital of Israel, right there on the edge of the Mediterranean Sea. Tel Aviv, and it wasn't the biggest piece of land. It was one of the smaller pieces of land, but it was very fertile. It was a very good piece of land. It had the land that going up against the sea, and then it had mountains out on the side. Dan became unhappy with the land they'd been given. They felt like they were a little bit too crowded. That many people, probably 200,000 when you count women and children and the older people and the families, they didn't feel like they got as much as everybody else did. So they were a little bit unhappy. Not only that, they got run out of their land. They got run out of the fertile ground and into the mountains. They let the Canaanites that were there, instead of them wiping out the Canaanites, they let the Canaanites push them up into the mountain range. If you go into Deuteronomy chapter 20, again, I'm fixing to get to Judges 19 here in a minute. The Lord told something to the people, all these tribes, when we go into the Holy Land, look. It says, when thou goest out to battle, chapter 20 of Deuteronomy, against thine enemies, and you see horses and chariots and people more than thou, you're going to go against, every one of you are going to go against people over here in the Holy Land that we're going to invade. Every one of them are going to be bigger than you. They're going to look stronger than you. They're going to have more horses, more war machines. They're going to be much better equipped for war than you are. But he said, but be thou not afraid of them, for the Lord thy God is with thee, which brought thee up out of the land of Egypt. Now, he's speaking to them, but he's speaking to us too. Many times when we face circumstances that we don't know how we're going to handle. And he's saying, if you'll remember that I'm with you, I'm on your side, have a little faith. If you'll have faith in me, I'll take care of you, even though odds looked against you so many times. And it shall be that when you come nigh into the battle, that the priest shall approach and speak to the people, and he shall say unto them, and he gets down to verse 4, for the Lord your God is he that goeth with you to fight for you against your enemies and to save you. I'm your Lord. I'm going to take care of you. Have faith. Don't get scared away by things that are bigger than you. Don't get scared away by the diseases, the problems, the cares of this world. I'm on your side. And he's told this to Israel, and he's telling this to us today. It's why I think we have a lot of identification with what's going on here. And the Lord gives them two rules when you go attack this land. And this is fixing to be applicable to the tribe of Dan. He said, number one, you're going to come upon cities that are not in the area that I give you. I'm giving you this little piece of land here. And he told each one of them, wherever they were, I'm giving you this piece of land. But when you come in to take over the land and you come up to a city that's not in your territory, he said, make peace with that city. Try to work with them, make peace with them. You'll be dominant over them, but make peace with them. Don't go in there, slaughter them, and kill them all, but try to make peace with them first. He says, but now when you come into the territory, that's rule number one. He says, but now when you come into a city in the territory that I give to you, wipe it out. Completely take out all the people. I want you, they are evil people. And this is one of the things that's talked about many times about how could you send in the Israel people to kill everybody? If you go read the Old Testament carefully, those people were very evil. Their morals were terrible. They had bad morality, sexual immorality. They worshipped idols. They were pagans. They were cruel people. And the Lord says, when I send you into your land, though, I want you to do battle with them, and I want you to wipe them out. Totally abolish them. Burn down their cities, especially because I don't want you being subject to their idolatry. Their idolatry is bad. Don't let yourself get commingled in those cities. The cities you go into that are not your territory, make peace with them. But when you come into the cities in your territory, I want you to clean it out and start from scratch. Because he said, I do not want any idolatry going on. I don't want you picking up on any of their idols and their idolatry. All right, now that's the rules he gave them. That's how they were to go in and take place. And we're fixed to see over here in the first part of Judges, I just told you a minute ago, the very first chapter of Judges, it talks about how they went in to Joshua, let them in, and how they went in, and each one of them took over their territory. It starts off, verse 17, Judah went with Simeon, his brother, and they slew the Canaanites that inhabited their area, utterly destroyed it, just like the Lord had told them to. And it goes through and talked, but some of the tribes didn't do what the Lord told them to. They stopped short of doing it. Verse 27, neither did Manasseh drive out all the inhabitants in their territory. And verse 29, neither did Ephraim drive out the Canaanites in their territory. Neither did Zebulun drive out all the Canaanites in their territory. And they go through the whole list. A lot of that tribe, and this is what caused a lot of their problems. They ended up falling themselves into adultery because they didn't follow the Lord's commandments. But to get on to verse 34, and we talk about that they drove out most of the people except for Dan. Go to 34 in the tribe of Dan. And the Amorites forced the children of Dan into the mountain, for they would not suffer them to come down into the valley. They got a choice piece of territory, and they got scared because the Amorites were tough. They got scared, and they let the Amorites push them back up into the mountains. So the tribe of Dan, instead of living down in the valley, in the fertile valley where they could grow their crops and raise their families, they were forced up into the mountain to live in caves. That's where Dan was, and Dan got unhappy. I'm not going to spend a lot of time tracing a lot of history. I don't want to bore you. But Dan was unhappy. Wait, we're one of the largest tribes, second only to Judah. We've got 65,000 fighting men, probably 200,000 total altogether. We've been given this small territory. It was very good and very fertile, but they didn't like what the Lord gave them. They decided, you know, we know better what's for us than the Lord knows what's for us. They didn't work with the Lord. They decided to take the matters into their own hands. And that's what we're about to see. And this is one great thing that happened to Dan. Dan was the first tribe that led the nation of Israel, started leading them out of the ways of the Lord into the hands of idolatry. That's where we get in Judges chapter 17. Now this is where we're 17 and 18. 18 is about the tribe of Dan, but you have to read chapter 17 in short. I'm not going to read it in entirety. I want to talk to you about it though. Hope you'll take time at some point in time to go read it. But what we see in chapters 17 and 18 together, 18 sets up, you have to read it before you can read 18. 17 sets it up. You're going to see, number one, confusion in the family. Secondly, you're going to see confusion with the ministry. And as a result, you're going to see confusion in society. And these are the three bedrocks of our nation and any nation today. Number one is the family. If there's confusion in the family, there's going to be problems down the line. If there's confusion in the ministry, then the society is going to have trouble. And we see the result of this in society. This hasn't changed from 3,000 years ago that we see here. We see a perfect example of it here. If you go into chapter 17, and you can read these, but I want to just talk to you about it a little bit. We find that in the tribe of Ephraim, Ephraim was one of the other sons. Ephraim, like I said, Judah had the land. Judah and Benjamin had the land around Jerusalem, right here in the center of Israel. And next to them, over at the ocean, would be on this side for y'all, was where Dan was, but they got run into the mountains. Right above them was the tribe of Ephraim, and they had the mountainous range. It was a good mountainous range, but that's where they were. It's referred to here in the first chapter of Judges 17 as Mount Ephraim. It was because it was the mountainous part, but it was a good place where Ephraim and everybody else then was scattered out. And said, there was a man in Mount Ephraim whose name was Micah. And chapter 17 is about Micah. And we're fixing to see the impact that Micah has on the tribe of Dan coming up in chapter 18. But Micah lives here in Ephraim with his mother, and his mother apparently has some wealth. She has some money, but part of her money is stolen. She gets stolen 1,100 shekels. It's about $1,000 today. That's a lot of money back then, but she has $1,000 stolen. And you read this, you read between the lines, she kind of suspects her son may have stole it. She kind of suspects Michael stole it, because when she talked about it, she said, you know, and this is what we'll do sometime, and I'll pick on Brother Gary. I do him from time to time. But I think Brother Gary stole my money. I'm going to go tell him. Brother Gary, you know, somebody stole my money. I'm not sure who it was, but I'm going to put a curse on it. You know, trying to guilt him. You know, we'll do this sometimes with our kids. Somebody got in and did this, broke something. You know, we'll try to put the guilt trip on our kids, make them come forward. Well, that's what she did to Micah, because he says, you know, she put a curse on it, and she put a curse on it into the ear of Micah. She made sure he heard this curse she put on it. Well, this bothered him, so he got a little scared, as our kids will do. And he went back and said, well, that money that's missing, I took it. I got it. Well, she says, okay, well, thank you for telling the truth. And she puts a blessing on it, but he stole his mother's money. Number one, he coveted it. He didn't honor his mother and father. He coveted that money. That's another Ten Commandments he violated. She says, I was going to give all of that money to the Lord. Well, there's another example for us too. If you go over and remember the book of Acts, where there was a man named Ananias and his wife Sapphira, everybody was selling part of their land and giving it to the Lord. Well, they sold their land and they made more money out of it than they thought they were going to. And they gave part of it to the Lord and the part of it they kept back. Well, they ended up both of them dying as a result of that. Apostle Peter caught them in that lie. And both of them suffered death by the hands of the Lord there because they lied about giving. You know, we do this from time to time and think, you know, next year I'm going to give this much to the church or this much to the ministry or this much to charity. And then I thought, no, that's too much. I need to keep a little bit of that back for myself. Well, this is what the mother did here. She says here she was going to give, down here in verse 3, she said, I had wholly dedicated all that $1,100 in silver to the Lord. If you go over here in the next verse, she says, but she ended up giving 200 of it. Instead of the $1,000, she gave roughly probably a little less than $200 actually to the Lord. She's now done the same thing. She's worshiped and coveted her own money. I knew a man one time that said, I'm going to end the year, before the year's over with, I'm going to give this certain shares of stock to the Lord, give it to the church. Well, when it come down to the end of the year, the stock had greatly increased in price. And I heard him made the comment, and I didn't hear him directly, but I heard him talked about it. He said, I'm going to give the money to the Lord that stock was worth when I said I was going to give it. Of course, it had increased substantially, so he wanted to keep the gain out of that. Well, that's not what we should do. We've got to remember that when we make a commitment to the Lord, we've got to remember who we're making a commitment to. And I'm not telling what each of you do. We all have the duty to give the Lord, ministry included. And we should honor that commitment when we do it. And we shouldn't try to, because we know Satan's going to tempt us. Satan's going to come in and change our mind based on our own covetry and our own pride and our own, the love of money is we get to doing that, and we get ourselves in trouble with the Lord. Anyway, it says, she instead took the $200 worth of silver and gave it to a silversmith and said, I want images made that we can worship the Lord. She was going to have one carved. It's called a graven image, carved. And she's going to have one molded, you know, silver melted down and poured. And, you know, when they carved images, a lot of times they would decorate it with silver. Maybe put silver eyes on it or put some decorations on it. So she had those two things made, a carved idol to the Lord that she could worship. Now, she didn't give all $1,100 started there, but she created an image she could worship out of one molded and one carved. And her son then, it said he took and had two things made, an ephod, E-P-H-O-D, I hope I pronounced that correctly. That's a religious garment you wear. It's a robe. We think of a priest's robe. And, of course, he's trying to copy what the other priests had to do. He made an ephod, which he wasn't supposed to do. And he made teraphim. I think I pronounced that right. Verse 5, T-E-R-A-P-H-I-M, teraphim. Teraphim are, it's a cult-like pieces that you put together. That you use for worship, you use for studying what the Lord wants me to do. I think of something like today's world, a rabbit's foot. I'm going to have a rabbit's foot because it's going to give me good luck. Teraphim were little pieces, and I don't know exactly what he had, but it'd be like tarot cards you read or little things you use to put together, cult-like things that are used for worship service, not to the Lord, but to give you luck, to tell you, reading tea leaves, reading cards, tarot cards, Ouija boards, rabbit's foots. I know I used to have a rabbit's foot as a kid, and that's what they're creating here. That's what Micah is creating. It's going to have a big impact on Dan. Micah and his mother are creating here is all these idolatry worship things, things to worship by. And it says, and next he did this, and he built himself a house of gods. It's a little g on gods. He created a shrine. He created a shrine with all these things to worship other than the Lord. Now, the Lord said, we're supposed to worship him on faith. And faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. That's what we're told over in the book of Hebrews. We want to worship something we can see. I want to be able to, you know, something I can pick up and feel and see. I want a rabbit's foot. I want tarot cards. I want an idol there that I can worship. The Lord says, no, you worship him on faith. And he'll give us our initial faith, but we're told over in 2 Peter that we're to build on our faith, add to our faith by doing good works. Micah and his mother didn't want to do that. They wanted something substantively, something tangible they could hold on and see and worship. We're told to worship on our faith. Use our faith to worship the true Lord. Instead, they were creating gods. And it says, Micah did only that. He created not only a house, a shrine. He's violating. His list is running up on violating the Ten Commandments. He's coveted his mother's money. He's lied about it. He then didn't honor his father and mother. She's created graven images in the Lord. They're just really running up a tab here against the Ten Commandments. And it says, not only that, he ordained one of his own sons become his own priest to preside over his shrine. And it's summed up in verse 6. In those days there was no king in Israel, but every man did what was right in his own eyes. Even if there had been a king, it doesn't matter. You still don't do what's right. That's why we keep thinking if we had a king in this country, we wouldn't have to think the king would do it all for us. That's not what our duty is. Our duty is always to look to the Lord. King is to run the government, and we need to pray that he'll run the government according to how the Lord would direct him. This is where we have confusion in the family. The family is the basic unit of our society. Go over in Deuteronomy, and we're told that the family is the basic teaching unit. That's where we raise our children, and we should teach them right. Not like what was going on in this family. Everything they did here that we're told about was violation of the Ten Commandments. Best I can count, they violated 6 or 7 of the commandments right off the bat. We go into verse 7 now, and we're fixing to see that as a result of this, we're fixing to have confusion in the ministry. Said there was a young man that came up from Bethlehem. He was a Levite. We'll find out later his name was Jonathan. But he's a Levite, and he had sojourned there, and it says he was looking for a place. He was sojourned so he could find a place. He's looking for work. He's a Levite. Now, first of all, back over there when the 12 tribes of Israel were given places to go live, areas, the Levites were given specific cities that they had to live in. We've got a young man here that came out of Bethlehem, which was not one of the cities Levites were supposed to be living in. He probably moved there. He's moving around looking for some place to work. Levites were supposed to be supported by the people. Those were the ministry. That was the priesthood back in those days. And so when the people apparently didn't support the priesthood like they should, priests started traveling, looking for work, looking for places to go and things to do. We have a violation here also of what the Lord had told them is, it's up to you people then to support the Levites. They're going to take care of the tabernacle. They're going to take care of the church. You know, they're going to give you guidance, and you should take care of them so that they don't have to worry about looking for a place to work. And that's what they're doing here. That's what's taking place. You have this Levite traveling. He's looking for a place to work, and he ended up at Mount Ephraim, there at Micah. Stopped off at Micah's house and stopped and saw him. And Micah said, what are you doing here? And he said, well, I'm a Levite, and I'm looking for a place to work. And Micah said, why don't I hire you then? You're a Levite. How about if I hire you to be my priest? I want to hire you to be my priest. He said, you know, I'll give you so much silver every year. I'll give you a pair of clothes and victuals. I'll give you room and board. I'll clothe you and I'll pay you if you'll come and be my priest. Well, this guy liked it. He said, all right, that sounds good to me. He's coming because I'm getting paid, and I'm getting clothes, I'm getting room and board. Ministry is supposed to not be a hireling. We're supposed to be shepherds. Ministers are not supposed to come and go anywhere for the money. If they get supported, that's good, and that's the duty of the people, and you leave that up to the people. We're supposed to go and because you're a shepherd. A shepherd is supposed to die for his sheep. John over here in John chapter 10, John tells us where Jesus, not John, it's Jesus speaking here in John chapter 10 about Christ says, I'm the shepherd. He gets over here in verse 11 and says, I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd giveth his life for his sheep. But he that is a hireling, if you're going for the money, if you're based on a salary, then you're a hireling. He that is a hireling and not the shepherd, whose own the sheep are not, seeth the wolf coming and fleeth, leaveth the sheep. A hireling sees the wolf coming and he hightails it out of there. He doesn't stay and protect the sheep. He cuts and runs, and he flees. And the wolf catches them and scattereth the sheep. The hireling fleeth because he's a hireling and careth not for the sheep. He goes on and says, you know, I'm the good shepherd. I know my sheep, and I love them. Well, this man has just abrogated all his responsibilities as a Levite, as a priest. I'm going to go where the money is. I'm going to stay here because this guy's going to run and take care of me. I'm going to have an easy life. I'm going to take care of his shrine, his cultic-type worship services. because I get paid to do it. Here the ministry has just violated his basic oath. That's something, again, this is the duty upon the ministry. You don't go someplace for the money. You go someplace to take care of the people, to try to help be a shepherd to them, give them direction and guidance. But he doesn't. He does it because he says, and the Levite was content to dwell with the man. He was happy. I am satisfied now. Instead of going where the Lord has led him, he goes where the money is. And it says, and Micah concentrated Levite, consecrated. He ordained him to be his priest. Well, first of all, ministry and priesthood are chosen by the Lord, not by man. Ministry, that's what we have to talk about. A ministry has to be someone that's called of God. Not, I don't go because I want to go be ordained. I don't go to a school somewhere and get a degree just and become that way. He's become a hireling of a man. And he says in the verse 13, the last part of this chapter 17, I have my own Levite. I have my own Levite to be my own priest. I've hired my own minister. He's going to do my bidding because I'm hiring and I'm paying for him. He's become a hireling. Now we're into chapter 18. Now with that set up, and I've spent half my time here talking about 18, this is where Dan comes along now. Dan, remember, they're back down there on the coast. They don't like where they are. They've been run up in the mountains. They don't like where they are and don't feel like they've been done right. They didn't get as big a piece of land as everybody else did, even though they're one of the larger tribes. And they said, the Danite, tribe of Danites, sought them an inheritance to dwell in, for all the days of their inheritance had not fallen to them among the tribes of Israel. Everybody else got their land. We didn't get ours. You didn't do what the Lord told you to do. But they forget to talk about that. They forget to go back and ask the Lord. They forget to trust the Lord to get what's entitled to them. You know, I look around the room and I'm going, you know, I don't have what Brother Kendall does. I don't have what Brother Joe does. That's unfair. Well, maybe they're doing what the Lord wants. Maybe I'm not. You know, it's easy to covet what somebody else has got. That's the problem that Dan's running into right off the bat. They're coveting and loving what somebody else has got, and the Lord's done us wrong. The Lord hadn't been good to me. He's been good to everybody else. Then, Gus, we better go out on our own. This is what's wrong with society today. It's all set up by what's taking place in the family and in the ministry. But they're unhappy, so they said, verse 2, it says, let's send five men out to go spy and find us a new piece of land. So these five men head out. They from the tribe of Dan, they head out. First place they head north. First place they stop at is Mount Ephraim in the house of Michael. They stop to spend the night there. And they look and they hear this Levite preach and they say, hey, we recognize your accent. You're not from around here. You're from down south in our territory. So they hear his voice and they recognize him. Says, what are you doing up here? And he gets down here in verse 18 and verse 4 and he says, well, I'm with Micah. This man has hired me. I am his priest. Again, he's admitting he's a hireling. I'm coming to go to work for him. And they said, well, then as long as we're on our way north, this happens to us a lot of times. You know, I don't ask the Lord what I need to do, but on my way, if I run across a minister, I'm going to say, would you bless me on this trip? I'm asking you to bless what I do, not what the Lord wants me to do. And that's what they did. And he said, yeah, you're blessed and go about your way. Well, they head on up further north, verse 7 down here. They head up and they come to the city of Lachish. Lachish is like 5 miles outside of Aleppo. This is the area we're talking about. Far northern Israel. It's now where Syria wraps around the top of Israel. And it's way up on top. It's right straight north of Jerusalem, probably 100 miles north of Jerusalem. And that's where they end up. And they look and they go, oh, this is a good-looking city. And it's not in the territory the Lord gave them. Remember what the Lord told them to do? Make peace when you come across a city that's not part of yours. You wipe out those in your territory, which they did not do. They come up here into Lachish and they say, look at this. These people here are by themselves. They don't affiliate with anybody else, anybody the tribe. They're kind of vulnerable. They don't have a magistrate. They don't have a sheriff. Nobody to stop us, put us to shame. They're a weak people. And they've got a good place to live and says, let's take this spot. So they turn around and head back down to the Dan, verse 8 and 9 and 10. They head back down to the tribe of Dan and say, hey, we found the exact spot we need to go. The people are weak. We can go take this city. We can move right in. We can make that our territory instead of the land the Lord gave us. We can do this better than what the Lord did. So they get the tribe of Dan. The first thing Dan does, it says in verse 11, it says, well, we need to do this. Let's get us 600 men armed with weapons of war. They get 600 men that, like we say today, they are armed to the teeth. They're armed to the teeth. I mean, they really get their hardened warriors out to head off. They're going to have, if you wonder what, you know, what I call it, armed to the teeth. That means they're covered with weaponry up and down. They got shields. They put their very best weapons of war on these. They got shields. They got helmets. They got armed to the teeth means that when you get, even if you get a good shape and you get a sword and a shield, then the last thing you do to fight, you take a knife, put it in your mouth. Now I'm ready to go. I got all weapons and I've got a knife to take it any minute. That's what armed to the teeth means. I just throw that in there, though. But that's what you had here. They sent 600 men. They sent them up. They were going to go back up to the city of Lachish. They're going to rename it Dan. They're going to take it over. On their way up, these 600 men stop again at Mount Ephraim and see Micah. And they've got traveling with them these five spies that went earlier. And they said, we're showing you the way. But it says, right here, let me tell you, there's a priest here, a Levite. And by the way, they've got a nice shrine set up here that they worship all these idols. Maybe we ought to take those idol things with us. Maybe we ought to take all this worship stuff with us. We have our own worship center once we get up here to Dan. And the 600 men says, that's a good idea. We'll stay here and guard it. This Levite priest, we'll take hold of him, make sure he doesn't interrupt us. Y'all go in there and get the stuff. So these five spies go back in there to Micah's house. They steal his graven image. They steal his molten image. They steal the ephod and the prayer room. They steal the whole house. In other words, we got us an instant worship center right here. And they come back, and once they come back and get outside the gate, then the priest says, hey, what are y'all doing? You're taking all of Micah's stuff. This is the stuff I've been in charge of. This house of shrine. And they say, hey, be quiet and listen to us a minute. We got a deal for you. Why don't you come and go with us? We'll pay you more money. You won't be the priest of one man. You'll be the priest of an entire family of Israel. We'll give you a big job. We give you a bigger, better deal. Again, you know, I'm a minister and I'm going to this little congregation. Maybe I can go preach to a big congregation. I'll get more money. I'll have better robes. I'll have this. This is really wonderful. You see this happening in the world today? We do, don't we? Anyway, it says not only did he allow it to happen, it says here, verse 20, the priest's heart was glad. Oh, I'm excited. This is a great job offering here. He is totally, you know, violating all his priest duties. He has truly become a hireling of the first class. I want to go where the money is. This man I'm supposed to be dedicated to, forget him. I'm going to go with a bigger group. So he throws in with his other group, and they head north further. It says, it gives you some interesting details in here about this tribe of Dan, these 600 men. They take the women and children that are traveling with them and put them up front in the carriages up front. That's because they're going north. They know if they're attacked, they're going to be attacked from the behind. So they put the women and children up front. And sure enough, when Micah gets home and finds out all his stuff's gone, he gathers up all his neighbors, and they go chasing after him, and they catch up with him, and people says, what are you doing? He goes, you stole all my stuff. You stole my gods. And you've taken them. Let me tell you something. If you're worshiping idolatry, your gods are going to be taken from you. They're going to be stolen. You have a God that cannot be taken away from you. If your God is the Lord, you won't lose him. It'll never be taken from you. If you're worshiping something that's not your God, you know, about the time that everybody knows I'm a football nut and a political nut. By the time I get to worship my team, they let me down and I lose. Same way with my political. If I get supporting some political candidate, I'm going to lose. I've got to remember, my God cannot be taken away from me. You can worship all other sorts of gods in this world, whether that's money or you know, whatever it is, money or job or sex or an addiction of some type, any type of, you know, whether it's a bottle or pills or whatever, you're going to lose anytime you make those your God. If the Lord is your God, it cannot be taken away from you. If your God can be stolen by five men, it's not a God. It's an idolatry, a piece of idol worship. And that's what he did. He caught up with them and said, you stole my gods. Well, you know, nobody can steal your God. If the God is your Lord, he's not going to be taken away from you. Anyway, they said, don't make us angry or you're going to lose your own life. They threatened him and intimidated him, and he turned around and left. He didn't think much of his gods. Of course, he can go back and create more idol gods like this. He turned and went home. Now, the last four or five verses of the chapter here, it says, and Dan headed up. They got up there to the city of Lachish. The people that were quiet and secure, quiet, peaceful people, people they were supposed to make peace with, it says, and they smote them with the edge of the sword, and they burnt the city with fire. Again, they didn't protect the land the Lord gave them that they were supposed to, and they allowed themselves to be run out. They didn't trust the Lord. Said they thought the people were bigger than us, they're stronger than us. And the Lord said, remember, don't pay attention to that. If you have your faith in me, I'm going to take care of you. Instead, they left the land the Lord gave them, and they go up here and attacked and destroy the people they weren't supposed to. The people in the good cities that they weren't supposed to, supposed to make peace with, they go up and destroy them. And there was no deliverer because it was far from anybody else. People up there in that city had nobody to help them. They took the city and burned it and built a new city. They came called the name of the new city Dan. Dan is still there today. If you look on a map, it's a few miles outside of Aleppo. This whole area now where 10 million people, and they can't put all those people there. There's no question in my mind. Most of them are out there in the suburbs overlapping this exact area where Aleppo is the same area now where Dan is. And the children of Dan set up the graven image, and Jonathan, who's that priest, and his sons were priests of the tribe until the day of captivity. They said, this Jonathan, that priest, that Levite priest, became the head of that new tribe. He was a hireling. They began to worship that. Over in 1 Kings chapter 12, you'll find out that when the northern Israel was created, they set up Dan as the primary worship center. One place at Dan, one place down here at Bethel. They set up those two jointly as the primary worship center. Dan became one of the leaders in worship of the northern tribes. Those 10 northern tribes that end up disappearing, they call them the lost tribes of Israel. The only two that were left were Benjamin and Judah, and that's the only two left today. All of these people up here got captured by Assyria, got blended in with them, either died off or got turned into Samaritans because they crossbred with the people of Syria. And it says, and they set up themselves Michael's graven image, which he made. All the time the house of God was in Shiloh. At that time, the Lord had set up the tabernacle in Shiloh and said, that's where you're to go to worship. I will tell you where to go worship. He said at Shiloh, when David took over Jerusalem, he moved everything to Jerusalem, and Jerusalem became the house, the place to go worship. Even though that house was there, the Lord had told them where to go worship, they set up their own worship center. They set it up with idolatry and idle things to worship instead of the Lord. They led the people astray. Not only did they adopt this form of ministry that Micah had set up, a fake priest that had given up all his credentials effectively as a priest, gave them all up. They did everything. They got a hireling as a priest. They did everything they shouldn't have done instead of following the Lord. The Lord just said, if you'll just follow me and trust me, I'll take care of you. But like most of us men do, we think, that's good, but even in today, I don't need to go read the Bible. That's the Lord's way. I know the way better than the Lord knows for me. I know what to do better than the Lord knows what to do for me. I'll close with you by going to the book of Dan, chapter 4, the first few verses. From which come wars and fightings among you. And that's not just talking about literal wars. It's talking about anything that wars in your life. Where do those come from? Come they not hence, even from your own lusts that war in your members? All of your problems in this world come from your own personal desires. That's where all your problems come from, your own personal desires. You lust, and you have not. You kill, and desire to have, and cannot obtain. You fight and war, yet you have not, because you ask not. The Lord says, come to me and ask for what you want. Follow my law and my commandments, and come to me when you want something. You ask and receive not, because you ask amiss. You're asking for the wrong reasons. You come and ask because of your own lust of the world. Come and ask the Lord to help you with your problems. He knows what your problems are. You don't have to tell him how the answer is. Ask. You ask amiss that ye may consume it upon your own lust. You're asking for your own benefit. Lord, give me a new car, because I want a new car to look good. You should say, Lord, help me provide transportation for me and my family. And let the Lord handle those details. He said, you're asking because of your own greed. You didn't hear verse 7. He said, submit yourselves therefore to God. Resist the devil, and he will flee from you. Draw nigh unto God, and he will draw nigh unto you. Back over in Hebrews, where he quoted about having faith, he tells us in there that, you know, that we're to have faith in him and count on him to help us out instead of taking things into our own hands. We follow his direction and his commandments. He said, he is a rewarder of those that diligently seek after him. If we do those things we know He wants us to do, praise Him, worship Him, study in His Word, come and gather with the assembly to help each other out, says He'll reward that. You pray to Him and ask Him for guidance for all your needs instead of taking them over yourself. He's a rewarder of people that do that. He said, I'll help you out when you go against the big battles. You don't think you can win those. Come to me for help, and I'll go with you. Instead, I'm going, oh, nobody can help me do this. I better figure out a way to do it on my own. And then I mess it up royally. We do just like the Danites did. They got themselves in trouble. They no longer exist. That's a nation that's gone now because they were captured by the Assyrians. Lord, we worship a wonderful Lord who will take care of us when we have faith in Him to do so and turn for Him to do it. Y'all been very kind with your attention. My prayer is the Lord richly bless you. Do you have a song, Brother Gary?